Hello everyone, my name is Elijah David, minister of the 12th Hour Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation, Mount Zion, the 12th Hour, in the Liberty Hill, Texas. Today is December 3, 2016, or it is Phoebeth 5, 2020. We will start our second service today on the Sabbath day with a song entitled, Softly and Tenderly, Yahshua is Calling. Softly and tenderly, Yahshua is calling, calling for you and for me. See on the portals, he's waiting and watching, watching for you and for me. Come home, come home, be your baby, come home. And this is tenderly, Yahshua is calling, calling, oh sinner, come home. Why should we tarry when Yahshua is pleading, pleading for you and for me? Why should we linger and heed not his mercy? Mercy's for you and for me. Come home, come home. Hear your baby, come home. Kindly, tenderly, Yahshua is calling, calling for sinners. Home. Time is now fleeting, the moments are passing, passing from you and from me. Shadows are gathering, death days are coming, coming for you and for me. Come home, come home. Be here, baby, come home. Kindly, tenderly, Yahshua is calling, calling for sinners. Come home. Wonderful love he has promised, promised for you and for me. Though we have sinned, he has mercy and pardon, pardon for you and for me. Come home, come home. Part 2, White House Recruiter, verse, page 15, Vitihara. We're going to do a little review. Last paragraph of page 14. It says, but the day of the labor obviously represents the period in which the light of the world, the Bible itself, lightens man's path. Thus it is that in his parable, the master, the Asir of the vineyard, regards the Old and New Testament dispensations as the only way, only day period of all probationary time in which he goes to the marketplace at 5 consecutive times to hire servants to work in his vineyard or in his kingdom. So when Yahshua went with Moses down to Egypt, what did he invite the children of Israel to do? First, they had to be delivered from Pharaoh, the Egyptian king, by the blood of the Passover. So there is no deliverance of Israel. The deliverance of Israel has always begun at Passover. So Yahshua went with Moses down to Egypt, had the Passover, and the children of Israel were commanded to have their loins girt, have an kneading trough upon their shoulder, and they were to bring their unleavened bread out of Egypt. Lo and behold, it was unleavened, because it had to be, because they were in the Passover week of the unleavened bread. Right there proves that Yahweh, through His Son, set up the sanctuary system. That's the only way that the children of Israel could be delivered, was to put the sanctuary system into operation. Because, see, it had not been in operation for at least 215 years of the captivity of Israel down in Egypt. I say it hadn't been in operation. You know what? It was in operation too down in Egypt. Because when Joseph was sold down into Egypt as a slave, the Ishmaelites took him down there. And Joseph, through a process of time of trials and tribulation, he was exalted to the governor of Egypt, and he was taken to Pharaoh in the palace, and he taught the Egyptians the sanctuary service. So we know Joseph didn't stop performing his vows and following the sanctuary service, keeping the seventh day Sabbath and all those other holy days, Passover, Pentecost, a Day of Atonement, so forth. Joseph was taught that by his father Jacob. So the children of Israel, they descended from Joseph down there in Egypt. I say they did. No, the family of Joseph came down to Egypt. Jacob. And all of his, rest of his brothers, his 11 brothers. And, Joseph, became their ruler down in Egypt. And that's where the children of Israel stayed for 215 years. And they kept the sanctuary service, and they taught to the Egyptians. And the Egyptians was keeping the holy days, because they're the ones that named the holy, months and days after Egyptian names. They named the 12 months of the year, giving them Egyptian names for each month. And so Moses accepted that, even though the Hebrew had their names for the 12 months. Moses accepted the Egyptians putting their names on the 12 months of the year, even though they were pagan, so to speak, because he kept them at the right time. The only reason why Moses endorsed it, because they kept them at the right time. So yeah, they were following the system. So when Moses instructed the children of Israel on the night of the Passover, when they were thrust out of Egypt, saying, "Gird yourselves and do thus and thus," well, they had kneading troughs that they made their dough in. And they had the unleavened. They had the unleavened dough. And so they were very aware of the sanctuary service. And so, likewise today, we've been introduced as Adventists to the sanctuary service ever since 1844. Actually, William Miller introduced the sanctuary service, the 2300 Day Prophecy, in 1833. That was to be fulfilled starting in 1844. So Adventists are without excuse. All they got to do is follow the sanctuary service back to its origin, where it was set up under the law of Moses, by Moses coming out of Egypt. So ignorance without excuse. They should be keeping all these holy days. All right, it says, finally, the night falling today can only represent the period after the gospel work is finished, after probation for man's salvation is closed. Then as the light of the world, the word of Elohim, sinks beyond the horizon of the day, darkness covers the earth and gross darkness of people. Isaiah 60, verse 2. It is a time which finds the destiny of every being forever fixed. Then follows the Yahweh's irrevocable finality. He that is unjust, let him be unjust still, and he which is filthy, let him be filthy still, and he that is righteous, let him be righteous still, and he that is holy, let him be holy still. Revelation 22:11. When does he say that? The day that they enter into the city that came down from Yahweh out of heaven and are sitting down here on this earth. The day that they entered into the promised land, and it says, without walls. Why is it Israel dwelling without walls? Because Yahweh is a wall around them to begin with. And then in the very end, when they are dwelling in the city, there's no walls around the city. Because there's no enemy out there alive to endanger the saints in the city. It's only saints. And they're all in the city. There's nothing outside the city and the walls of the city and around the borders of Israel. There's not a living soul except the righteous. Now, there are many righteous people left in those nations that don't come up to Jerusalem. Zechariah 14 says so. But they're required to come up at least three times in the year and so forth. It is the time when men shall run to and fro to seek the word of the Yahweh and shall not find it. Amos 8:12. For the time when the unmindful of the master's call and the impenitent of the sin realize and cry in the frenzied and agonized despair, the harvest is past and the summer is ended and we are not saved. Jeremiah 8:20. The truth has now become clear that the parable divides the time of the salvation also into two equal parts of the 12 symbolical hours. You get that? 12 symbolical hours. 12 hours in a day. John 11:9. Yahshua says there are 12 hours in a day. Okay, it says the period before the Bible, the night. And the period during the Bible today, lending additional force unto the fact that the parable thus divides time, Yahshua declares. And there are there not 12 hours in the day? If any man walk in the day, he stumbleth not, because he seeth the light of this world. That is in John 11:9. Okay, proceeding now, we come to another point of the special significance. The first four groups were heard at the consecutive intervals, three parabolical hours apart, whereas the fifth, the last group, the one heard at the 11th hour, came only 2 instead of 3 hours later than the fourth group. And thus only one parabolical hour before the day's end, shortly before probation closes. For this 2-hour period from the 9th hour unto the 11th hour is a singularity which comes as a climatic exception unto the pattern of the sequential and regular 3-hour intervals between calls, for it obviously reveals that the last call comes unexpectedly and surprisingly within the period of the 9th hour group. Hence, there are only 2 parabolical hours for the one group and only 1 parabolical hour for the other or fifth group that's pointed out in Matthew 20, verse 6. Okay. There are 4 3-hour segments, and 4 times 6 is 24. But the last 4-hour segment has a double leadership, and they split the hours up. 2 hours for the Adventists, and 1 hour for the Davidian Seventh-day Adventists, and that's who I represent. I represent the Davidian Seventh-day Adventists in the house of David, the rod. David the rod, Davidian. And also, the church is called Branch Davidian. Why is it that? Because Yahshua the branch has joined the rod, which is David the rod, Yahshua the branch, making up an ensign for the people. Okay, it says, to determine the identity of the laborers participating in each of the 5 different calls, we necessarily begin our quest with the servants of the first call. We have already seen that it is in the Bible as a spiritual light of the world that makes up the parabolical day. For we all know, moreover, that the Bible arrived with the Exodus movement, also since the arrival, Yahshua never bargained, as it were, with another people, and that they were the only ones unto whom he ever committed the ceremonial covenants. Okay, and all of their rewards and promises. Inescapably, therefore, the first group of the parable, those who went to labor early in the morning at the rising of the spiritual light, the Bible, and with whom the bargain was made to receive a penny a day, were the ancient Israel as they were going out of Egypt, the time that was at that time was early in the parabolical day, and the concord with by the spirit of the prophecy, or in the concord or in confirmation, is with the spirit of prophecy declaring. For the Jews had been first called into the Yahshua's vineyard. Yahshua's object lesson, page 400. At that early hour, as Yahweh began to indict the scriptures as the light that lightens the earth of men began to rise, he remembered his covenant forever, the word which he commanded unto a thousand generations, which covenant he made with Abraham, and his oath unto Isaac, and confirmed the same unto Jacob for a law, and unto Israel for an everlasting covenant. Psalm 105, verse 8 to 10. Having thus by the first call for servants solidly established the time in which the parabolical go-to-work calls started, we are now to ascertain the call time and work period of the service of the second call. The second group, those sent at the third parabolical hour, must necessarily be the ones who were called to work next, and they were the early apostolic Nazarene creed. Significantly, that's the disciples and their followers and their converts. Significantly enough, too, Yeshua was crucified at the third hour of the day, Mark 15:25, and likewise Pentecost came at the third hour of the day. And so that was at the ninth hour. And Another point of significance of which we should take note is the fact that the messages borne by these first two groups, by the ancient Israel and by the early Christian, were not of a reformatory nature. They were not old, forgotten truths in the process of revival and restoration. Rather, each was a new revelation, meet in the due season, present truth, especially adapted fully for the meeting of the needs of the people in their respective time. The former group were inspired and commissioned to teach and practice the truths of the salvation as embodied in the ceremonial system. The latter group were inspired and commissioned to teach and practice the same immutable truths in their advanced light, advanced from the typical to the antitypical representation, from the ministration in the earthly tabernacle unto the ministration in the heavenly one, that is, from the sacrifice of a lamb of the flock unto the sacrifice of Yahshua himself. For the lamb of Elohim, thus the latter group taught the old truths in a new and original light, in the light of the gospel, that the Yahshua was crucified for the remission of sins, resurrected in triumph over sin and death, and ascended to make atonement and reconciliation for the penitent sinner, not in an earthly but in an heavenly tabernacle. Since the message of the first two groups, the one carried by the Exodus movement and the other carried by the apostolic movement at the cross, that the disciples were each in their respective times fresh from the glory, that fact logically established itself as a divine precedent and pattern for all the messages of the parable. Accordingly, each of the three remaining groups must likewise be entrusted with a message of the new and distinctive revelation of the meat in the due season, truth adapted especially and fully for the meeting of the needs of the Elohim's people at the time then present. Therefore, we need only to trace down to the annals of church history the unfolding of the scroll till we come upon a newly and originally revealed and proclaimed truth subsequent unto the message of the first advent of Yahshua. It must point out the servants of the third call. For the Protestant Reformation, being purely an endeavor to restore old downtrodden truth and not to reveal new, advanced ones had no new message of its own, nothing that had not already been taught in times past. It therefore follows that the third group and message must be sought during the years following the Reformation. The only revelation of the new prophetic truth subsequent to the Reformation is the announcement of the year in which was to begin the work of the cleansing of the sanctuary, primarily in the behalf of the dead, based on Daniel 8:14. That's talking about the cleansing of the sanctuary, but not then fully understood. As its announcement was made by the first day Adventists, it necessarily follows that they were the third group of servants. That's William Millerites, yeah. The third group of servants with a new and distinctive message. And as is well known, they started proclaiming it in the year of 1833, announcing that the cleansing of the sanctuary was commenced in the year of 1844. Thus, in 1833, the clock of the parabolic time struck the hour of six. The statement again, he went out about the sixth and ninth hour and did likewise. And speaking of the two calls, not singly, as in the cases of the two preceding calls, But conjointly shows that the sixth hour message and the servants were to be closely related to and associated with the message and with the servants of the fourth call. So it was that the sixth hour group and message, that of the first day Adventists, the Millerites, 1833, and the ninth hour group and message, that of the Seventh Day Adventists, Ellen G. White, 1844, fused into one, because the message of the former was in itself divinely designed to bring the message of the latter to the light. Moreover, as soon as the terminus and the prophetic 2300 days down 814 was reached in October of 1844, just then Daniel 8:14, that's cleansing sanctuary, which takes place every year on the Day of Atonement in Israel. That's the 10th day of the 7th month, Daniel 7:9-10. Daniel 12:10-12, along with Revelation 14:6-7, the first angel's message and his primary faith, were first proclaimed by the Seventh Day Adventists, saying with a loud voice, "Fear Yahweh and give glory to Him, for the hour of His judgment has come, and worship Him that made heaven and earth and the sea and the fountains of water." Revelation 14:7. Pay attention to Bible numerology, for in this here scripture of Daniel, chapter 7, verse 9 and 10, verse 10. Points out the beginning of the judgment of the dead, according to Daniel 8:14. Now, Daniel 8, the number 8 means new order, 14 means two sevens, and then Daniel chapter 7, that's the seventh month, and number 9 means that that prophecy made its fulfillment at the end of the ninth parabolic hour in 1844, and the number 10 means that this cleansing of the sanctuary of Daniel 8:14 took place at the end of the ninth hour and beginning with the tenth hour in the seventh month. And there you have it, Daniel 7, 9, and 10. Now review that in your mind and check that back over. Okay, so now, let's go on now. Now here in Daniel 12:10-12, along with Revelation 14:6-7, the first angel's message, and what is now, what is number 6, verse 6 of Revelation 14? That was William Miller called at the end of the sixth hour to work in the seventh hour and the eighth and the ninth hour. And it's in Revelation 14. 14 means two sevens. Okay. At the end of the sixth hour, 1833, to start his work, William Miller, in the seventh hour, 1833. I never seen anything so perfect as far as Bible numerology. And here you have Daniel 12:10 that's given here. And Daniel 12 is the hour that we're in now. And 10 talks about the saints that are purified, made white, and tried. Daniel 12:10. And then through to verse 12. The 12th is the time when all this meets its fulfillment, the 12th month. So there you have it again. All perfect Bible numerologies explaining exactly the real meaning of what took place prophetically. Okay. The first angel's message in this primary phase were first proclaimed by the Seventh-day Adventists, saying with a loud voice, "Fear Yahweh and give glory unto Him, for the hour of His judgment is come, and worship him that made heaven and earth and the sea and the fountains of waters, Revelation 14:7. Now, when you numerically put that Revelation 14:7 together, you have 14 means two sevens, and verse 7 means the third seven. And this is a prophecy that has a double application. It met a fulfillment in 1844. Fear Yahweh and give glory to him, for the hour of his judgment has come. That was the start of the judgment of the dead and the three angels' messages. Now we're going to have repeated the three angels' messages in our day, and that's found in Revelation 14:7. There you have three sevens there. And it took place at the end of the 2002, end of your 3-6, the 666, Judgment of the Dead ended with the Adventists in 2002, opening of the seventh seal, found in Revelation 8, 8 means new order, seventh seal opened up in 2002, and there you have it. Numerically three sevens, Revelation 14:7, 777 is the start to bring a close to the seventh movement, the seventh dominion with the Adventists, and begin the number eight, the new world, the new order for the kingdom. Okay, it says, thus the Seventh-day Adventists in 1844 began to proclaim what they term the investigative judgment of the dead, which in the scriptural terms is the casting out of those who have not the wedding garment on, Matthew 22:11-13. The shutting out of the five foolish virgins, Matthew 25:10. The dividing of the sheep and goats, Matthew 25:32-33. The separation of the bad fish from the good fish, Matthew 13:48. Synonymously, they rightly understood it to be the antitypical day of the atonement, as the day in which are removed from the books in the heaven the names of those who in the closing of their life's career fail to attain eligibility to come up in the first resurrection, in the resurrection of the Holy One, Revelation 20:5-6. All these aspects are comprehended in the word. Then shall the sanctuary be cleansed, Daniel 8:14. Okay, as the cleansing of the sanctuary in behalf of the dead is necessarily purely a book transaction. That is the reason for its taking place only in the heavenly sanctuary. Hence, the names of the ineligible for the first resurrection are screened from the names of the eligible ones, that the heaven's books deal with all aspects of the life, as evident from Psalm 56:8. 69:28, 139:16, and Daniel 12:1, and Malachi 3:16, Philippians 4:3, and Revelation 3:5. Hence, prophecy reveals that when the judgment was set, the books were open. Daniel 7:10. What books were open? The books of the seven seals. The book of the seven seals. He opened up the first six books for the judgment of the dead, clear back to the Garden of Eden. Those six books contain the record of all the righteous to be saved that are dead and in their graves from the Garden of Eden, clear down to 1844. Okay, so now, but that seventh book was not opened until 2002. Okay, now, it says that as the judgment, our message is of a character and important singular in all church history, also as it is the only prophetic message to sound subsequent to the sixth hour a message, nothing can be more certain than that as it went forth in 1844 for the first time, Elohim's parabolic time phase then struck nine. Consequently, the ninth hour group and the parable can be none other than the Seventh-day Adventists, who were then on foot to proclaim that the judgment sit and the books were opened, Daniel 7:10. And that anyone who then, during the antitypical day of the atonement for the dead, should be found among the dead with his sins unconfessed, his soul not afflicted and without the wedding garment on, would be cut off from among his people, Matthew 22:11-13. Leviticus 23:29. In brief, the message declared that the separation and the congregation of the dead had then begun. Now that for the first time the parable is ablaze with the light, none but the eye that is hopelessly gone out in the dungeon darkness can fail to see distinctly that the message with which we Seventh-day Adventists were entrusted in 1844 at the closing of the ninth hour is not the 11th hour message, nor the message of the judgment of the living, but rather only of the judgment of the dead. Okay, it says, as prospective servants of Yahweh, that each here at this focal point of the parable pause to comment to fix firmly in the mind this all-important lesson as brought out in the following illustration. The White House Recruiter. The Day of Labor, Matthew 20. Okay, now it says, the next decisive point of truth is that the judgment of the dead was to be proclaimed unto many peoples and nation, tongues, and kings, Revelation 10:11. Mark the word many never means all, and never means every, since this scripture, okay, so let's just read that, mark the word many never means all, and never means every, since this, since this verse of the scripture foretells the expansion of the ninth hour group, now the ninth hour group is the Seventh-day Adventists that were called at the end of the ninth hour when they were still in the ninth hour, but they were at the getting closing to the end of the ninth hour. Highly, we pay each one carefully to examine what the Revelation 10:11 says on the subject. You dare not add unto the word nor subtract from it. Then compare it with the scriptures that follow, foretelling the expansion of the 11th hour group and message, and you will have the whole truth in reference to the finishing of the work. Now the time has finally come for Yahweh to recruit his 11th hour servants. This precious parable is unfolded, and for the first time it is plainly seen that whereas the judgment of the dead was to be proclaimed unto many nations and people, the judgment of the living is to be proclaimed unto all nations and unto every people on earth. Here's what inspiration itself said. And I saw another angel fly in the midst of heaven, having the everlasting gospel to preach unto them that dwell on the earth, and unto every nation and kindred and tongue and people, saying with a loud voice, fear Yahweh and give glory unto him, for the hour of his judgment is come, and worship him that made heaven and earth and the sea and the fountains of waters, Revelation 14:6-7. Okay, that servants of the 11th hour call, those who escape, who are not cut off, Leviticus 23:29, while the house of Yahweh is being judged, 1 Peter 4:17, the event which signalizes the commencement of the judgment of the living worldwide, are to be sent unto all nations. Inspiration attests through the prophet Isaiah. For behold, Yahweh will come with fire and with his chariots like a whirlwind to render his anger with fury and his rebuke with flames of fire. For by fire and by his sword, for the Yahweh cleaveth all flesh, and the slain of Yahweh shall be many. And I will set a sign among them, and I will send those that escape of them unto the nations, unto Tarsus, Pool, and Lud, that draw the bow, the Tubal, and Avan, unto the isles afar off, that have not heard my fame, neither have seen my glory, and they shall declare my glory among the Gentiles. And they shall bring all of your brethren for an offering unto the Yahweh out of all nations upon horses, and in chariots, and in litters, and upon mules, and upon swift beasts to my holy mountain, Jerusalem, saith Yahweh. As the children of Israel bring an offering in the clean vessel into the house of Yahweh, Isaiah 6:16, 16:19, and 20. With these solemn words, Yahweh warns that the slaughter, the Antipical Passover Testimonies, Volume 5, page 505, 211, Testimonies, Volume 1, page 190 and 198, is to take place among those who are of the household of the Yahweh, the Church. For the escaped ones are sent to the Gentiles, who as yet have not heard of Yahweh's fame and his glory. Obviously, the angel who execute this slaughter are to take away from the Church the unrighteous, those who are figuratively depicted in one instant as bad fish and in another instant as guests not having the wedding garment on. Here, let every serious-minded reader pause to ponder what inspiration says, Isaiah 6:19 and 20, explain that those who escaped the slaughter of Isaiah 66:15 and 16 are to be sent as missionaries unto the Gentiles. Well, they're not going to be sent as missionaries. Well, I say they're not, because it said these here Gentiles have not heard of his fame or his glory before. So they have to go introduce the truth to them and then harvest them as they accept the truth. That's what it's all about. Who as yet know not Yahweh, hence these escaped remaining ones, or Elohim's remnant, his first fruits of the harvest, his godless servants, 144,000, the elect, means that they had an election and they were elected out of the Adventist Church. And only they, none others, the Scripture declares, shall bring all their brethren from all nations. So, those that escaped out of the Adventist Church, so all the righteous of the nations, they are actually members of the Adventist Church. They knew it not, and the Adventist Church knew it not. But the 144,000 didn't know it until they come through their judgment and got the seal and got the anointing and the commission to go and to gather their brethren out of all nations, and then they were taken by flying saucers to those nations. And the Spirit conveyed them there, and the Spirit is what brought forth the remnant out of all those islands and nations of Gentiles that are brethren to the spiritual house of Israel, Seventh-day Adventist Church. So they're going to take the place of the tares that got purged out of the Adventist Church worldwide. All of those converts from all the nations are going to take the place of the tares that were purged out. So it says, into the purified house of Yahweh, his white house. What is more, no right-thinking mind can even begin to conceive of the possibility that with any less holy and formidable an agency than such a mighty ministry alone escape from sin, sinners, and judgment. Will the Yahshua ever finish the work and cut it short in righteousness? Romans 9:28. thereby saving his people from the terrible tempest that is now about to break upon the earth and lash it length and breadth. Satan grimly knows this. He knows his time is short and growing fearfully shorter. He knows that this faithful ministry are soon to be disclosed to you and to take the field against them. He knows that will be his Waterloo. Hence, his supreme effort now to eliminate them, finding out at last, though, that he cannot do so. His consequent aim will be to bring the time of trouble such as never was, Daniel 12:1, in the hope of destroying all. It was a similar mass murder method that he employed in the days of Pharaoh in his drowning of the Hebrew male children, Exodus 1:22, in the hope of doing away with Moses, and again in the days of Herod, and his fiendishly slaying all the infants from 2 years old and under, Matthew 2:16, in hope of doing away with Yahshua. But as Yahweh spared his own then, he will likewise spare his own today. Michael, the great prince, deliverer, shall stand up, Daniel 12:1, that's in the 12th parabolic jar that we're in right now, for all who stand up for him, and whose names consequently are retained in the book of life, and shall gloriously deliver them. These two aspects of the conflict, Satan's aim to destroy Elohim's elect, and Michael's aim to deliver them, brings the great and dreadful day of the Yahweh. Although the newly revealed light of the truth now shining on the subject is new unto all of us, it is not new in the Bible. To keep us wide awake and on the alert for the progressive unfoldment of the truth, the Spirit of Yahweh has through the years signaled our attention in the ensuing statement. Wonderful possibilities are open unto those who lay hold of the divine assurances of Yahweh's word. There are glorious truths to come before the people of Yahweh, privileges and duties which they do not even suspect to be in the Bible will be laid open before them as they follow on in the path of the humble obedience doing his will. They will know more and more of the oracles of Yahweh. Testimony, Volume 8, page 2, 322. We talk about the first angel's message and the second angel's message, and we think we have some understanding of the third angel's message. But as long as we are content with the limited knowledge, we shall be disqualified to obtain clearer views of the truth. Gospel Workers, page 251. There is yet much precious truth to be revealed unto the people in this time of peril and darkness, but it is Satan's determined purpose to prevent the light of the truth from shining into the hearts of men. Precious truth that have long been in obscurity are to be revealed, and a light that will make manifest their sacred worth. For Elohim will glorify his word that it may appear in a light in which we have never before beheld it. Testimonies on Sabbath School Work, page 62. Counsels on Sabbath School Work, page 25. We need never expect that when the Yahweh has light for his people, Satan will stand calmly by and make no effort to prevent them from receiving it. He will work upon minds to excite distrust and jealousy and unbelief. Let us beware that we do not refuse the light Yahweh sends because it does not come in a way to please us. Let not Elohim's blessing be turned away from us because we know not the time of our visitation. If there are any who do not see or accept the light themselves, let them not stand in the way of others. Let it not be said of this highly favored people, as of the Jews, when the good news of the kingdom was preached unto them. Notice it says, good news of the kingdom, which is the plan of salvation, the blood of the everlasting covenant. That's your good news of the kingdom, and how it works and applies here in the New Testament. That works and applies through the Yahshua's blood as he ministers in the heavenly sanctuary above as our high priest on a daily basis. They entered not in themselves, and them that were entering, they hindered. A Testimony, Volume 5, page 728. So the prophecies, we all know, are the heaven's light unto our feet. If we fail to open our eyes and hearts unto them at the time, Yahweh will have us profit by unrolling the scroll. How then shall we escape being like the blind leading the blind? Brethren, for your soul's sake, do not pass lightly over this life and death matter. For as you have seen the light shining on the subject illuminates, the fact that subsequent unto the ninth hour group and message, that's your Seventh-day Adventist, called in 1844, there were first to come an addition to the message, then sealed servants, the all-consequential message of the judgment of the living, and the all-powerful servants, the escaped ones who are to go to all nations rather than only unto many. Initial assurance that there was to be an addition until the third angel's message came to us long ago in the following words. I saw angels hurrying to and fro in heaven, descending onto the earth, and again ascending into heaven, preparing for the fulfillment of some important event. Then I saw another mighty angel commissioned to descend unto the earth, to unite his voice with the third angel, and to give power and force unto his message. This message seemed to be an addition unto the third message, joining it as the midnight cry joined the second angel's message in 1844, early writings, page 277. Plainly then, it is of the 11th hour servants with the additional message, with the message of the judgment of the living, who rescued Elohim's people out of Babylon. Indeed, never until the church herself has been freed from the hypocrites and the abominable, and thus made white and clean, can Elohim morally pour out his spirit in the Pentecostal power upon his people, and sound the cry, come out of her, my people, that you be not partakers of her sin, that you receive not of her plagues. Revelation 18:4. Note that the voice which calls Elohim's people out of Babylon clearly implies that there is no sin in the place unto which the voice calls them. Moreover, there could be no justification in calling them out of Babylon to save them from the plagues which are to overtake her, because of sins, if the called out ones are to be brought into another place of sin. The wages of sin would be no more or no less damaging in one place of sin than in another. From these now unfolding scriptures, it is plainly seen, too, that the message of the judgment of the living is heaven. It has the heaven's final addition of the glad tidings for the saints and of the sad tidings for the sinners. Hence it is to be proclaimed by the godless servant, 144,000, the servants of the 11th hour. Thus far the fact stands out that this final call comes at the last hour of the parabolical day, just before the gospel work closes, being the last message of the mercy unto the world, and also the last call for servant It must therefore be borne by the antitypical Elijah the prophet, Elijah David, that's speaking to you now. By him who appears just before the great and dreadful day of Yahweh. Malachi 4:5, Matthew 17:11. Accordingly, the servants of the 11th hour must be called to the work by him during the time he is announcing the day of the Yahweh, the day in which Yahweh takes his fan in his hand, Matthew 3:12. Testimonies, Volume 5, page 80. Testimonies of Ministers, page 373. And purges his floor, blows away the chaff, and burns the tares. Once he puts the wheat into his barn, Matthew 13:30, into his kingdom church, it ever remains without tares, and hence a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but holy and without blemish. Ephesians 5:27. Bellingham's White House, indeed, see Isaiah 52:1, Joel 3:17, and Nahum 1:15. In the other parabolic terms, the great and dreadful day of the Yahweh is his casting out the bad fish and putting the good into vessels. This is your terrors. The bad fish is your terrors. And the good into vessels are those Gentiles that are being harvested by the 144,000, and those Gentiles are the brethren to the 144,000, and the 144,000 come out of the Adventist church. So as you see, there is a purified Gentile people in all nations around the world that are waiting to be harvested by the Seventh-day Adventist church. But they have to wait for the 144,000, the first fruits first, to be sealed and harvested. Then they get this chance to be harvested by their own brethren. Matthew 13:47-48. It is a day in which he sits the sheep on his right hand, but the goats on the left, Matthew 25:33. It is the judgment day of the living, the cleansing of the sanctuary on earth, the work which purifies the church and makes it white, Daniel 12:10 and Malachi 3:1-3. This brings forth us at this hour. Contact us at the 11th hour call, and that's number 11. Click on our audio archive. We're going to close now with a song. Work for the night is coming. Work for the night is coming. Work through the morning hours. Work for the dew is sparkling. Work mid springing flowers. Work when the day goes brighter. Work in the glowing sun. Work for the night is coming when man's work is done. Work for the night is coming. Work to the sunny noon. Fill brightest hours with labor. Rest comes sure and soon. Give every fine minute something to keep in store. Work for the night is coming when man works no more. Work for the night is coming under the sunset sky. All their breathings are glowing. Work for daylight flies. Work till the last beam faded to shine no more. Work while the night is darkening, when man's work is o'er.